Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love.
Interesting birthdays today. The inventor of the dirigible, Graf von Zeppelin, was born in 1831 today. On this date also, two Rockefellers were born, Standard Oil, the world, one of the best organized companies, according to a lot of managerial studies that were done. The Vatican is also one of the best, or the Roman Catholic Church. In 1839, the guy who started the Standard Oil monopoly or combine, if you want to call it that, John D. Rockefeller was born. In 1908, his grandson, Nelson Rockefeller, later governor and vice president, governor of New York, vice president of the United States, and he also wanted to be president. And, of course, he died. He reportedly died in the arms of his secretary. He divorced a woman called Happy. And he also, one of the big controversies in his administration as governor of New York was the Attica prison uprising back in, I think it was 1971-72, one of the worst prison riots, one of the most brutally put down in U.S. history. Also on today, famous musician Percy Grainger, who was a health nut. He was into self-flagellation, wrote some very beautiful music. He was an Australian. He was born today. The brother of Evelyn Waugh, Waugh, W-U-G-H, Alec Waugh, was born today. Modernist American composer George Antheil was born today. And here's a presidential anecdote, which we used in our series that we presented in the San Francisco Unified School District and on KLW-FM. In 1907, the father of Mitt Romney was born today, George Romney. He was also Secretary of HUD. A lot of problems with HUD throughout every administration since Lyndon Johnson set up HUD with the first black cabinet member, a guy named Robert Weaver. And, of course, as I jokingly said before, but it's true, during the Vietnam War, George Romney, who wanted to be the Republican nominee, made the statement about Vietnam that he was misled. And if the heat is turned on Mitt Romney on this health care program that he signed into law in Massachusetts, he may say, I was misled. Anyway, here's a political forecast. It could be that the Republican ticket will be Mitt Romney and Representative Bachman. Let's see how accurate I am. And, of course, other people think the same. They know more than I do. And, of course, the guy who is putting this together is Vin Weber, the former the head of the Council on Foreign Relations and the former Minnesota congressman. And, of course, Michelle Bachman, although born in Iowa, is one of the representatives from Minnesota. I doubt that Paul Lenti, who's also very interesting, he's a Polish-German ethnic heritage, I think that's better, and of all things, he's an evangelical Baptist. He was governor of Minnesota, but there apparently that state's in serious financial trouble, as are other states around the United States. And also in the musical Fiorello, and this is also true, that when Fiorello LaGuardia ran for mayor of New York, the saying was, nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell. Polanyi's got he has a law degree, but, of course, it's not the degree. It's the ethics and the competence and the honesty. People need to look at that, look further on these people. Among the great musicians who were born today, Billy Eckstein, who was black despite his Jewish name. Actress Faye Emerson. I think she was married to Stuart Symington, a Democratic senator from Missouri. And then Nelson Mandela was born today. He's still alive. The South African freedom fighter also had a law degree. And the guy who put ABC News, ABC Sports, on the map, Rune Arledge, was born today. He kind of made news, used the sports format, and it made it quite popular. And I think they had people like Howard Cosell and other types like that. And then he had the Canadian who later became American. I forgot his name, who did the ABC News, and he was also caught at one of the Bilderberger conferences in Holland at the Bilderberger Hotel. Dianne Feinstein was also there one year. These are people who are alleged or accused of trying to create a one world. Anyway, among the deaths today was the wife of President Warren G. Harding, Grace Goodhue Coolidge, most fascinating woman. She is described as the first modern first lady. She wasn't afraid to speak her mind. She had an illegitimate child. Her father wanted a boy, and she was brought up a boy, and then she resisted all of this. She didn't become a lesbian, as far as we know. It's unlikely. She had an illegitimate son. An illegitimate son. Her father disowned her. She had gone to the Cincinnati Conservatory of Music. So she taught piano to support herself and her son born out of wedlock. One of her pupils was the sister of Warren Harding. And when her father learned of this, and then she became involved with Warren Harding, who was a ladies' man, he had a great voice, and one day we'll play some of the archival tapes that we have of him and other presidents. He opposed the relationship because, again, Warren G. Harding was accused of having Negro blood or African blood. And, of course, Warren G. Harding said, I can't help it if one of my ancestors jumped over the back fence. That stalked him all his life. But, and he was also a philanderer, even though he later married Florence Harding. Grace Coolidge was the wife of the vice president, Calvin Coolidge, and she died today. Excuse me, I made a mistake. Getting confused with these first ladies. Now, Florence Harding was fascinating because she, unlike Edith Boeding Wilson, who actually was acting as president when Woodrow Wilson, the predecessor of Warren G. Harding, suffered a heart attack after he came back from Paris, the Paris post-World War I peace conference, when he tried to con everybody into a League of Nations, trying to sell League of Nations to the U.S. Senate, and he went around the country and he had a heart attack, and she signed documents. She did a lot of things and blocked people from seeing Woodrow Wilson, and of course he was the guy who segregated Washington. Washington D.C. was not segregated. A lot of blacks, including people like J. Edgar Hoover, who reportedly also had African heritage or ancestry. And anyway, but Florence Harding was fascinating. She had the first lady's press conference. She spoke out in favor of veterans' rights, the peace movement, and women's rights. This is before the women got the vote. This is also interesting that at the parties and functions in the White House, she served liquor. And that was prohibition. And, of course, Warren G. Harding always enjoyed a good stiff drink. After Warren G. Harding was also the first president to visit Alaska. And then he came down from Alaska to California and was in the Sheraton Palace Hotel here in San Francisco, so where he had a heart attack. What she did then was she blocked an autopsy, and also she went through all of his papers and burned most of them. And, of course, he had a table in the White House, some joke referred to as the lay of the land because of his interest in the women. And then, of course, he was succeeded by Silent Cal, Calvin Coolidge, whose claim to fame was as governor of Massachusetts. He put down the Boston police strike by saying public employees have no right to strike against the public. And, of course, later we will play the clip again of Coolidge talking about the deficit, which is something, you know, we think it's all news today, but it isn't. There has been this problem for a long time. Now, among the other events today, let's see, other birthdays, let's see. There's so many interesting people, and I'm trying to get them all in a short frame. Excuse me. That we had, what we have here today. We have in 1663, Rhode Island was granted its charter by the English, was still one of the 13 colonies. In 1693, New York City became the first city to they had standard police uniforms for their police. And this is of importance to Russian history. In 1709, Peter the Great, probably the greatest and the most modern, the guy who brought Russia into the modern world, Peter the Great, was always fighting with the Swedes. The Swedes at that time were the preeminent on the continent. They had the best army under Charles XII, who was reportedly gay. He defeated Charles at the Battle of Poltava, and that was the end of the Swedes, and the Russians were always fighting, and the Swedes wanted to keep the Russian bear out of the Baltic and these other places, and Peter the Great built a navy. He's the father of the Russian navy, and also he produced cannon for his armies. He ordered the bells of the churches and the cathedrals to be taken down and melted so they could be formed into cannon. And of course, the priests didn't like that, but they would have been under the Lutheranism of Charles XII. So, you know, this is an important date for the for Russia and students of Russian history. In 1777, of all places, Vermont became the first state to abolish slavery and to set up male suffrage. Only people of property could vote, you know, in the early part of this country. And in 1796, the first American passport was issued. And then we had in 1797, the first U.S. senator was impeached and expelled from the U.S. Senate. Now, this guy, William Blunt, is quite interesting. He was from Tennessee. He had fought in the American Revolution, and he was a land speculator. And what he did was Florida, which is in the news today and this week because of the Casey Anthony trial, Florida was owned by the Spanish. It was Spanish territory. It was later bought by the United States. But anyway, he tried to incite the Indians down there to work with the British to seize Florida from the Spanish, and that backfired. He was exposed. President John Adams informed the U.S. Senate that this guy was involved in treasonous activities. He was impeached by the U.S. Senate and expelled. But then he went back to Tennessee and was elected to state office. I guess these guys always managed to bounce back. In 1889, the Wall Street Journal was published for the first time, and of course, Rupert Murdoch acquired the Wall Street Journal after a long stock battle with the family that owned it and controlled it for all these years. And of course, now with the News of the World, we see that paper has been dissolved or shut down forever, at least forever, because of this accusations of all this hacking. Glenn Beck was also supposed to have been hacked, and the Wall Street Journal and Rupert Murdoch owned Fox. And I think that's one of the – we heard that that may have been one of the complaints why he's off the air there or will be off the air. What's also interesting is this newspaper scandal just goes to show that around the world, a lot of newspaper people do not have a governing body that which enforces ethics and honesty and competency, like the doctors and also to some extent the state bar associations. Although in California, it's become a fraternity, and if you're politically and sexually correct, you don't get, and you do, you steal money from clients or you violate the law, unless it's really egregious, you don't get your bar card removed and torn up and expelled from the legal profession. But anyway, we're seeing that media people are corrupt, and these are among the complaints about the Casey Anthony trial, how this was handled by these what are essentially media morons, and these are people who lie, who distort, and who omit facts and the truth. And we have this situation here in San Francisco. We will be publishing this weekend. The question has come up: how can jurors' names be disclosed? And there is this has already happened in the Steve Nairn case, and I'll tell you how we did it and why. And it was perfectly legal what we did at the request of the U.S. Navy, who asked me to investigate the case because I knew all the parties from 1969 forward. Anyway, there's a methodology, and it'll be quite interesting. So these people who are trying to get the names of those jurors released, they can be released, and they may have to go to court because Judge Belvin Perry is quite an interesting guy. He has a master's in education, a master's in science, and then he has a law degree from a reputable law school. He was also a former prosecutor. He had a minor sex scandal, and then also his father was a black policeman, I think, in Alabama. Quite an interesting guy. What's happening here? And let's see. So here I'm going to play that clip again, because people like these the best of the week, where President Coolidge talks about the deficit. And let me see, with this new system, I'm still having some minor problems, but we'll get it. Huh? Where the heck is it? Good Lord. But, again, you know, we hear about the deficit. Also, this is interesting. The United States hasn't defaulted. We've come close in the war of 1812, after the war of 1812. But other countries, not only Greece, but Spain defaulted on its debts, I think, 12 or 13 times. England did it the last time in the 15th or 16th century. We had, I think, Germany did after World War One. When they were hit with they were blamed for causing World War One, and so the victors imposed all these reparations payments, which led to all this inflation, where it took a shovel full of Deutschmarkers to buy one loaf of bread, and this also led to the depression in Germany and to, of all people, Herr Schnickelgruber, Adolf Hitler. Here's President Calvin Coolidge. Now he's silent for a few minutes here, a few seconds.
The country needs every ounce of its energy to restore itself. The costs of government are all assessed upon the people. This means that the farmer is doomed to provide a certain amount of money out of the sale of his produce, no matter how low the price, to pay his taxes. The manufacturer, the professional man, the clerk must do the same from their income. the wage earner, often at a higher rate when compared with his earnings, makes his contribution perhaps not directly, but indirectly in the advanced cost of everything he buys. The expenses of the government reach everybody. Taxes take from everyone a part of his earnings and force everyone to work for a certain part of his time for the government. When we come to realize that the yearly expenses of the governments of this country, the stupendous sum of about $7,500,000,000, we get $700,000,000 is needed by the national government and the remainder by local governments. Such a sum is difficult to comprehend. It represents all the pay of 5 million wage earners receiving $5 a day, working 300 days in the year. If the government should add $100 million of expense, it would represent 4 days more work of these wage earners. These are some of the reasons why I want to cut down public expense. I want the people of America to be able to work less for the government and more for themselves. I want them to have the rewards of their own industry. This is the chief meaning of freedom. Until we can reestablish a condition under which the earnings of the people can be kept by the people, we are bound to suffer a very severe and distinct curtailment of our liberty. These results are not fanciful. They are not imaginary. They are grimly actual and real, reaching into every household in the land. They take from each home annually an average of over $300, and taxes must be paid. They are not a voluntary contribution to be met out of surplus earnings. They are a stern necessity. They come first. It is only out of what is left after they are paid that the necessities of food, clothing, and shelter can be provided and the comforts of home secured, or the yearnings of the soul for a broader and more abundant life gratified. When the government effects a new economy, it grants everybody a life pension with which to raise the standard of existence. It increases the value of everybody's property and raises the scale of everybody's wages. One of the greatest favors that can be bestowed upon the American people is economy in government.
Well, that was Silent Calvin. Of course, Dorothy Parker, the great humorist, said when he died, she was heard that he had died. She said, "Are you sure?" Coolidge was probably the only president who wasn't sworn in by a Supreme Court justice.
The country needs every ounce of its energy to
We want to talk some more, Silent Cal. Still working out on this new system. Anyway, he was sworn in when he learned that Harding had died in San Francisco. He was in Coolidge was in Vermont, and his father, I think, was a justice of the peace, swore him in. Coolidge had some family tragedy. I think one of his sons contracted an infection that killed the kid, and this was before penicillin, which was discovered in around 1940, I think, by a Canadian or British medical scientist. Excuse me. So, and also Coolidge. Those of you who are military, love military history, and people who stand up for what they believe. The General Billy Mitchell controversy and court-martial, famous movie starring Gary Cooper as General Billy Mitchell and Rod Steiger as the prosecutor and Fred Clark as one of the prosecutors. This happened during Calvin Coolidge's administration. He sought to get this thing over with as soon as possible because as quickly as possible, because it was embarrassing, and he felt that the prestige and the security of the United States was at risk because General Billy Mitchell was making statements like, "Japan will attack Pearl Harbor," and of course, we know that he was accurate. And so Billy Mitchell was convicted. He was cashiered out of the Army. And then, of course, some 20 years later, the Japanese did attack on Pearl Harbor and in the Pacific. And today we have Mitchell Field named after him in Milwaukee. That's the airfield there. So we'll end today, and we'll be back Monday. I'm still working out on this new system. Let's go with what we can describe politics, although Warren Harding used to we get the term smoke-filled rooms. We don't hear that as much as often. And this is where politicians and public office holders would get in the room and smoke these heavy cigars and have liquor and play poker. And this is where the term, and make decisions when as long as they were sober or even not quite so sober. And some decisions they later came to regret. But this is where the term comes, politics and poker. So we'll end with our ending theme, and we'll be back Monday, and we will have more presidential anecdotes and from our lectures and from our tapes and from the archival material that we have. And we're hoping to have Patrick Butler, the dean of Cook County's real political journalist, and he'll be updating us on Blago, some inside information, and then what's happening with the most fascinating politics in the country, the politics of Illinois, and unlike, as I always say, what regrettably has become the crotch politics and pansy politics out here in California. But anyway, here's Politics and Poker.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big Ace.
Ace bet.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Impulse.
Possible straight. Possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's it going? We should make Jack Riley the guy.
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet out.
Politics and poker, politics and poker, shuffle up and cards and find the joker. He's a game for children, he's a game is rough. Decisions like
who to pick,
how to play, how to bet,
where to go, what to
do. All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paraphrase.
Bet 'em.
Little trade, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your mind.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Panichinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You idiot!
Well, there's some politicians that should be in jail anyway. We'll be back Monday, and we will be revealing how the jurors' names can be publicized or disclosed, as they say, and some other interesting facts about juries. So this is Peter Paul. Thank you for listening. This will stay up in the archives, and hopefully we'll get this whole system worked out. There's still a few kinks yet. So good night, and thanks for listening. Oh, God, what's going on here? Wait a minute. Oh, come on. I'm going to end up. I don't know what's going on here. We're trying to end this thing. I don't know what happened here, folks, but we'll end it. So good night.